I saw this tweet from Mark Gurman that was funny. It was a link to one of our stories, which was that AirPods can now be engraved with select emoji as Apple refreshes exclusive font, from our colleague Felipe. And I think his angle on that was like Apple just won CES 2020. And this was like the Friday before CES started.
That's pretty funny.
It's like, yeah, it was a pretty good one. I mean, there have been times in the past whenever Apple, you know, obviously doesn't have like a product placement role and or like product presence role in CES, when they will do things to sort of steal the news, whether it's like I think the gold Chinese edition of the watch was part of, you know, 1 year. I think maybe like an iPad mini brochure leak one time. There's lots of things. This is like actually, you know, very small announcement, but it is a change.
Or like in some years they'll have a leak, or not, like they're like a controlled leak of an event they're doing at the end of January, and it'll just slip out in the first week of January, just so it's like in the news cycle, right?
Uh-oh,
yeah.
So what this is it's that the AirPods and AirPods Pro, the charging case, you can now, you've always been able to have them engraved for free using like the same font that you get on the iPad or the iPod. You can't engrave iPhones, right? Those aren't. I don't think so.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't think so. I have an engraved Apple Pencil. Awesome. But yeah, so you've always been able to engrave the AirPods cases for free from Apple.com when you order them. But it's been that same font for the other devices, and it's not very legible, like considering what it is. And this is like they've taken their own font and they've made it, you know, as if it were designed for this size of a case. And now you can customize this like blank looking white case with your own customization. And I think this is actually like the first time I would consider doing an engraving like this. Plus there's emoji.
Because obviously it's all San Francisco, but they used to be using just like plain body font San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
Because before they even made San Francisco, they just used like plain Helvetica. And I never really liked that look on the engravings, because it was always just very like thin strokes of lines and kind of doesn't match like the boldness of the Apple logo. And obviously on the iPads or whatever, you have the engraving at the top and then right below you have the big Apple logo in the middle. Whereas the new font is S San Francisco rounded, which is kind of the same font they use in like the activity app on the Apple Watch for the numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And also if you... that now you, as well as getting the emoji, you can also just have like initials like BM, and the way it looks very similar to the little like contact card icon. So when you don't have someone's photo, it just has the two initials. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like the same kind of thing, just in a different place. And the slightly bolder engraving looks so much better.
Before, if you like manually did initials and it was just tiny size, small,
they'd be like really, really small.
And then now initials are like bigger, bolder. That makes sense. The only thing is that the emoji is only select emoji. It's not all emoji, which makes sense. But I hope they expand the options there, because I was considering for a moment ordering new AirPods Pro just to have an engraving in the case, with the justification being I would obviously gift my AirPods Pro to someone in the family, but they didn't have a rocket, which is what I would engrave on there. So they had poop and unicorns, but no rocket.
Yeah, obviously, because they're monochrome. Rather than, they can't just use the same art they've got on the phone.
Mm.
So obviously someone's had to redraw them. They've probably picked ones that they think are the most popular.
Yeah, right? The source of these, like, you know, you've got the preview on the AirPods case, but like the down below where you pick the AirPods case, it looks more like the classic drawings that you find. Like if you're in the Mac OS emoji picker and you go all the way down to like, you know, drawings and stuff.
Yeah, like the characters that aren't there, like the full rich color emoji. They're like the glyphs kind of that are just in the font at the bottom.
I
bet they added these ahead of Chinese New Year as well. That's probably they probably were timing trying to get them out for the holiday season and they missed that, but if they get them out this week, it's good timing for the Chinese holiday season.
Because they
go on, you know, they have Chinese New Year very, very soon.
Yeah, it's really just in time for Christmas 2020. They did have a dragon in there too,
and I'm sure they're trying to piggyback on the success of like all the accessories we've seen pop up for AirPods cases, like, you know, the little like things people have like sewn together, the little characters, and they even did a market campaign about that, right? Like a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm. And there was a long time where they didn't sell cases for the charging case, but now they do, and lots of variety. So, although if you use a case, you won't be able to see your emoji or, you know, your new Like, this is seriously the first time I've ever considered that maybe if I were, you know, to replace mine or gift mine to somebody else, then I would do engraving. And, you know, you can only do it at Apple.com. So it's one thing that, you know, they don't care what you buy it, I suppose. But, and also it, you expect delay when you engrave. So it kind of helps.
Yeah. And I hope they bring the new bolder font to the other devices as well and not just make them AirPods only, because I think it would be a lot cooler. Like, if you could get an iPad with the bolder BM, like monogram initials kind of thing, versus the current thing, which is like really, really small, that'd be pretty cool.
You can do the whole BZA mayhem in there.
The whole BZA mayhem.
All right. And speaking of CES, this is the first year where Apple had an official presence, not just employees walking around CES, but an official presence, not for a booth display or announcement or stage time or anything, but it was stage time, but for a privacy talk. And Apple's senior director of global privacy, Jane Horvath, was the person who spoke on behalf of Apple. Did you watch this video?
I watched parts of it. I watched enough to get the gist of what was going on, and then I kind of like tuned out.
Yeah, it's more than me, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I watched the
hyped up coverage. Obviously, Apple was there, but there wasn't much substance to it, really. Like, you can, if you play back in your head what you think, you know, executives from Facebook, the commission, and Apple, and someone else is going to talk about a privacy conference type event, you can probably fill in the gaps, right? They said locations really sense information. We only collect the information we need to use. And then on a couple of bits where obviously Facebook collects more data than Apple does, the Hovarth didn't refrain from saying, oh, well, Apple only collects blah, 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 right?
And right.
It was quite high level, and there wasn't really any revelations in what they were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're the CES audience, though, and you're not just Apple specific, then maybe there would be some things that you weren't exposed to before. And that's the reason they do their marketing pages and their ads about privacy too. We could do a presentation on it, but in this case, you know, maybe people in the audience might not be as up to date. The only thing
fair. Like, it is. Yeah. But basically, if you know the Apple go to lines on privacy and their policies,
that's what this was.
In a Q&A, basically.
Yeah. The thing that caught my attention on this is that just from the coverage, it seemed like like us, you weren't really well versed on the different activity of the companies, then from the sound of it, Apple said what they always say, and then Facebook and others were like, us, we do that too. You know, Facebook, I think, was on stage, through a person from their company to say that we build privacy in all of our products too, which is, you know, you can just say whatever you want to say, I guess. No one holds you accountable when you just do a presentation. But so that's what I found tricky here. And there was no, obviously, I think there were some questions, you know, trying to get pushback from the Apple representative to say, you know, how is Apple different? And it was like, no, you know, we're not going to talk about other people's practices, at least in this area. Tim Cook will, but not someone from the company. So
yeah, it was fine. And like, the thing is, it was more incidentally hosted at CES than, you know, Apple making a massive return to CES. I'm sure if there was like a similar privacy conference and then they'd invited Apple to go, they'd have just gone to that. Do you know what I mean? Like, the CES thing was like historic because they haven't been there since 1993, right? Well before.
Yeah. Other companies, Samsung, Sony, all kind of companies do actual, like, this is a product event that they hold, and it happens to be at CES. Or, you know, it's part of CES, whereas Apple didn't do a product event this week. You know, this was talk.
Yeah, if they did an actual product event, that would be kind of incredible to have them return to CES in that manner.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny that even though they were only here very, very slightly this year, that still stopped them from doing like the privacy wall like advert. Do you remember what they did last year where it said,
what happens when your iPhone stays in your iPhone? Yeah,
exactly.
And there was a good question.
Didn't do any of that this year because, you know, because they're there now, they can't be like, oh, we're high and mighty, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're not like these other guys because they were, you know, they were there in some form.
Yeah. And there was a good question about that, like, particular ad, what happens when your iPhone stays in your iPhone? And it was like, what about all of the apps from the App Store that can collect data about you? You know, they get caught doing it and they might get removed, or they might just be able to because it's opt in. You know, and there wasn't really a great answer there. It was just, you know, but it was a good kind of framing of the question of maybe the SOC experience is one, but once you involve the App Store, then is it not necessarily true anymore? So it was interesting. something, let's talk about some products from CES. So one that I found that was interesting was the Pop Socket. I call it the Pop Socket Donut Charger. the official name is the, it's Pop Donut. No, Pop Power Home Wireless Charger. And the reason I say donut is because it's a wireless Qi charger with a Pop Socket shaped hole in it. And then you can use an iPhone with a Pop Socket and wireless charging at the same time without having to take it off. You know, they've made cases in the past that are like, the Pop Socket can slide off of the case without the adhesive getting, you know, worn in. But as it stands today, you can't just like take a Pop Socket, which is very popular with a lot of people with iPhones, and then charge it because it's in the way. It's too much distance between. Yeah.
That, I've got a very important question to ask you, and you better answer correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a Pop Socket on your phone?
I use one for every lens on the iPhone. No, I don't use one. I mean, I use iPhone cases. I'm not going to say I don't use iPhone cases. But I don't use Pop Socket. My daughter does. My wife
that
has.
That's the right answer.
Yeah. Friends have. I have a friend with an Apple Care Pop Socket from Apple.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm kind of joking, but like my sister uses Pop Socket and stuff. Yeah. But they are very, very popular. But they're not my cup of tea in the slightest.
Which is why I think that this Pop Power Charger is interesting, because they are popular. I think people pick Pop Sockets over wireless charging, you know, and if we ever get to a point where like wireless charging comes in the box, then this is a pretty necessary thing, you know, if you want to use both of those, you know, features. So I thought it was neat. It's $60. It's kind of expensive. Well, not really for a wireless charger.
Yeah, it depends what shop you're looking at buying a wireless charger from, because you're buying them from an Apple store, $60 is about the price in line.
Yeah.
If you go on Amazon, obviously you can get like $10 wireless chargers.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can charge other things too, so I guess as long as it'll fit and connect, then you could. But I thought it was neat, and the reason is, like, just selfishly, my daughter uses a Pop Socket on her iPhone. It's like iPhone, case, Pop Socket. And for that reason, she can't do wireless charging without any kind of modification. And I'm thinking about buying one of these. That way I can just say, like, put your phone here. And because it's like Pop Socket placement, I haven't introduced her to wireless charging anyway, because it's kind of fiddly. Like, you've got to place it exactly the right, you know, in the right place. And so with this, it's like there's no X marks the spot. It's like, does it fit or not? And if it fits, it charges. So something to it.
I'll tell you what, there's a kind of conspiracy theory, like superstition brewing, I think, around using the Lightning port. At least I've observed it. Like, my dad now is really, he had an iPhone 6 before we got the 10R, and his iPhone 6 port like broke. Right at the end of its life, it would charge, but it would get like loose, so you'd have to like wriggle the cable around in it to make sure it was still charging. And so he's come to the conclusion that plugging things into the Lightning port ruins the port. And maybe that's true, or maybe that's not true. But now he's like fastidious. I'm only charging with a wireless charger because I don't want my 10R port to go have the same fate.
I do both. I mean, in the car, I use wired CarPlay that comes with my car. So, and my wife says wireless CarPlay is an aftermarket upgrade. But in those situations, I'm using the plug for wired CarPlay. And then if I need to charge like really fast, like if I forgot to charge overnight or I misplaced it on the charger overnight, then I'll bring out the big, what is it, 18 watt with the USB-C to Lightning, mm-hmm. and charge like in the fastest way possible. But yeah, it's, my go-to is wireless charging just for convenience, and it helps that I'm not a Pop Socket user. But I will buy this and make it my daughter's designated charger. And it'll have some benefits over other wireless chargers besides the Pop Socket part. Something else I saw that was pretty cool that came this week is Pioneer. You know, they make these aftermarket car units or head units where you can put them in your car. You know, what years ago it was like you upgraded your car to have, you know, a radio or a CD player or Bluetooth or an iPod connector. Now their big thing for the last several years has been that you can upgrade your radio and have a display, you know, in your car like a new car would. And I was looking back at it, it's like 2014. Is when I reviewed their first CarPlay aftermarket head unit. And, you know, CarPlay was CarPlay. That's what the big review was. But the head unit, it feels like it was 6 years ago, because the new stuff is just way, way better in terms of the quality of just everything involved. But they've got this new one that's coming out this year that costs $1,200. It's the highest end one that they make. And they've always made ones in that price range. They just haven't been this nice in terms of features. This one is 10.1 inches. And so that's bigger than the average, like 6 to 7 inch CarPlay screen that you get. But it's 720p resolution, which sounds bad, but it's, in my opinion, good, because if you have a higher resolution screen, even if it's bigger like this, then the tap targets can get really small. And so, and I've driven cars with those types of screens, and it's like CarPlay looks wrong in that way. I much prefer just bigger tap targets of the same UI laid out.
I do think with the iOS 13 redesign of CarPlay, though, they've optimized it better for, you know, higher resolution, bigger displays, yeah, because there is actually more stuff that you can fit in one place.
Yeah, me and my wife, our car screens are about the same size, and hers is denser than mine, and I prefer mine, even though mine's wired. But it's just because of it looks big, like there's less empty space in between the icons. So I like this about it. And it's what you call a floating receiver, and that means that the screen isn't like flush with the dashboard. It kind of lays over the dashboard, like a tablet mounted, which is what the built-in receiver in my car is like. And then it's adjustable. You can tilt it and move it up and down, left and right. But that's pretty cool. But it's a wireless CarPlay. So this is they've done this before. Wireless CarPlay with Pioneer in the last year or two. But this is one where it's not like most of the other ones on the market. I think it'll be out in the springtime, and hopefully I'll be able to get one to review and share my thoughts on. But it's the first time I've seen one in a while that I really think is compelling. The price, $1,200, is a lot, but these things always go down. That's like the suggested retail price. And then the vendors that sell them, you know, from Pioneer usually make them competitively priced with other head units that they have. So I think this will be pretty cool. And I've liked the Alpine ILX 007 since it came out a few years ago. And that was like the wireless CarPlay first aftermarket unit you could get. This one, the product number is, or product name is DMH-W2-8600NEX. So I just call it the new good CarPlay screen.
We are sponsored this week by Hyper. Hyper is 95 Mac's official CES coverage sponsor. So if you weren't in Las Vegas for the show, here's a catch-up on what they had to announce. Hyper revealed its latest range of USB-C hubs. The new HyperDrive Gen 2 hubs feature a heavy-duty design suited for facing the elements. The new next-generation hub offers super-fast microSD card slot, support for external displays at 4K at 60Hz, USB 3.1 Gen 2, and 100 watts of power delivery. That's twice as fast as the previous generation hub, and it means it can charge even the latest 16-inch MacBook Pro at full power. The hub comes with a long cable, so it can work well with devices like the iPad Pro, allowing the hub to lie flat next to the iPad on a table rather than dangling awkwardly in the air. The HyperDrive Gen 2 hub will be offered in a compact 6-port model, but Hyper also making a 12-port version and a maxed-out 18-port model. You can get an exclusive sneak peek at the new heavy-duty Hyper USB-C hubs at the link in the show notes. My thanks to Hyper for supporting 95 Mac Happy Hour and being our official CES coverage sponsor.
Eve, the maker of lots of our favorite HomeKit hardware, has a new camera called Cam Indoor, and they say that will work with HomeKit Secure Video. Have you seen this yet?
Yeah, it looked cool.
Yeah. It's what I kind of like about it is it's pretty minimal, but it's black instead of white, and so it looks just more like a, like maybe if you like the Logitech Surgical 2 cameras that I have, they're all white, and I like them a lot because you can get different mounts and they're very versatile in how you can present them and you know place them. Not sure how this will do, but it looks like it's pretty thin and light, and
yeah, it looks pretty small. It almost looks like a webcam you'd stick on the top of your.
Like that's right. Monitor. That's right. Yeah.
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 So that's and obviously, cool. It's meant for indoor use rather than like the outdoor ones. But
yeah, yeah. And but
it's pretty nice.
They make Eve. They used to be called Elgato, and then Eve was their smart home brand, and then they changed the business up where it's just Eve, and Elgato is its own like gaming controller and display business. Eve is HomeKit only, and so it makes sense that they would, you know, they do a lot of sensors and things that are only. Like the only ones you can get from HomeKit, but now they're doing a camera with HomeKit Secure Video, they promise, so that's nice. And then Lutron, I'm a big fan for smart lighting in a home that you own or aren't afraid to change on your own. Of not doing Hue smart lights everywhere in the ceilings because of the whole wall switch situation that you've got to resolve. with it has to be turned on for the lights to be controllable. Lutron is what I like because you replace the wall switches and then anyone can control them when they walk in. There's no learning curve to it. And it works with lots of different LED light bulbs that are dimmable. They've got some new stuff coming this year that they showed at CES. I haven't looked too closely at it, but one of the things is a motion sensor. And I think they've done this before with other Lutron lines, but Casetta is the one that works with HomeKit. And so it's cool. Now you'll be able to have a Lutron specific motion sensor that I presume you mount to your wall. And then in HomeKit, it's one of those sensors that, you know, you can trigger it and activate things like turning the lights on or kind of thing. So I like this. There's a lot of things with HomeKit where it's not, you can't do certain things that you could do if you just had like non-HomeKit smart home stuff, like non-modern smartphone connected stuff, but just like with motion. And that's what I like. Like, I think this is in that direction. Like some family I have, they've got a bathroom light that you press the button on, but it also has motion. And then so if there's no motion for X amount of minutes, it turns off. And having that with HomeKit, like without making some crazy scheme, would be neat. You know? I think
yeah, because like motion sensors sound great, and then you put them in, and then there's just times when you want to enter the room and not have the lights turn on, but you can't like encode that into the system. So, or like you go into the room, you sit on the sofa for an hour, you're reading a book, and then obviously the timeout runs out and the lights turn off, and it's like, well, that's annoying too.
Yeah.
So, like motion sensors are one of those ones where it like sound really, really cool, but then you have to actually like think through what
you really
you know,
do,
logic yeah. conditions you're going to do. What's your process going to be? Does this actually work in every single room? Like you have to plan it out.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the case for just automation in general with HomeKit too. And now that I'm in one house, not moving and I've can like look at what the problems are that we're having and what could be automated. I'm slowly putting those together. And one day this year, we'll get to talk about that in more detail. But yeah, hope to try this out whenever it comes out. That's what CES is all about, is like things that you can't buy yet, but they're coming this year, hopefully. Something that you can buy, that you've been able to buy for a while without HomeKit support, is IKEA's smart shades. And as of this week, it seems like they work with HomeKit now, right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
people reported to us that they were getting the firmware updates and it was showing up inside of the home app.
Yeah.
It seems to work fine.
Yeah. The thing here is that's interesting is that there's a few different like shade vendors for HomeKit. One is Lutron. Their Serena shades are like around $1,000 per window if you price them out, because they're like, I guess, really nice shades. But you know, that's not affordable for a lot of people. And so IKEA, they've got a name for this, Trad Fry. I don't know, Trad Free, whatever. But that's the, I guess, the family of these things. But I just say the IKEA smart blinds because that's what they are. And they're affordable. So the prices are more like, you know, $100 and something per window instead of $1,000 and something per window. They've been delayed. And then as of this week, there are people saying that they actually got the update, at least in the US so far, to use them. And we even saw people share screenshots. So HomeKit Authority is a website that is HomeKit specific. And they had some screenshots of how it works specifically, which is just like the Serena shades that I reviewed a couple years ago, you know, but just like that. And it looks pretty good. And I think
blinds and shades in HomeKit work really well. For a while, I was using that that Soma thing. It's like that adapter where you rig it onto like normal blinds and then it turns the thing that the human would normally turn, but mm-hmm. to try and like turn it into a smart blind when it's not. And although I've stopped using that accessory just because it's like a pain to charge it, and it sometimes it would go out of calibration, but the actual like HomeKit side of it was really, really good. Like, as well as asking Siri to like open the blind or close the blind, you can say open the blind a little bit, open the blind to 60%. Like, there's so much flexibility there that just works, and obviously all that works regardless of what manufacturer of the smart blinds you're getting. As long as it's compatible with HomeKit, all of the same commands work, which is like the beauty of the HomeKit system.
Yeah, and you know how the home app has gotten a bunch of new icons this mm-hmm. year? Well, so have shades. So I didn't realize this until this story ran, but you know, when I reviewed the Serena shades a while ago, they had one icon and that was it. And I think it was like a window or something, you know, and it had like an open state and a closed state, and that was it. Well, these, they've got the open and closed state, which is kind of looks like toilet paper or a paper towel on a roll with like a little pull string on it too. But they've also got one that is assumed that it isn't up and down, but it's left and right. And so they've got you know, like bifold doors is something they've labeled, the person with the screenshot has labeled this, but it's, you know, standard like curtains. You give up the curtains, so that's kind of neat. So and that is something that I'm totally in the market for this year, because we've got, we were looking at some smart stuff and we're like, we're just going to use basic shades or, you know, curtains in this case until IKEA stuff actually works with HomeKit, not just go in the promise of in the future. And now that it's there, then I think like one window at a time is what we'll probably do. But I can't wait to be able to say good morning and all of the windows, you know, shades rise up together and everything. As long as you get a situation where battery life is good, or you can plug it into the wall, then it's convenient. All right, anything else from CS from you?
The only thing I would say is we didn't see any like partnerships or announcements regarding the connected home over IP stuff. Yeah. Really, it's just too early for that.
Yeah, CES 2025.
Well, based on the CES timeline, they'll announce promising for it next year, and then it won't ship until 2025.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that was one of the things I was thinking about going in, is maybe there would be a few more manufacturers, like, you know, we're joining the open revolution, and here's like a demo of something, like a prototype, but clearly it's all just in like the very early stages there. Like the Connected Home Over IP website says they might have a draft proposal ready by the end of the year, so I guess that does actually line up quite well for 2021 CES. It's 2020. Time to start fresh. Simplify the way you do business this year with Capterra, the website used by over 1 million people monthly to find software. Capterra simplifies the software search to just a few easy steps, and they help you make the most out of the tools that you find. Search and compare, get free guides and tools, read industry tips, and much more. Get started at capterra.com/happyhour. Capterra is the free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Capterra helps your business thrive by making the software buying process as easy and effective as possible. It can even educate you on how to get the most out of your tools before and after purchase. With over 1 million reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories and filter the directory by features, pricing, covering the entire range of business needs, from project management to email marketing, to even something like running your own yoga studio. How'd you get started? Go to capterra.com and drill down into a subcategory like app design, home building, insurance, or banking. It's completely free to look around and explore what's available. Don't trawl the web. Capterra brings everything together into one simple-to-browse directory. Visit capterra.com/happyhour for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/happyhour. Capterra, spelled CAPTERRA.com/happyhour. Capterra, software selection simplified.
All right, Mayo, we got news this week of the second ever iPhone photo challenge, and this year it works a bit different than last year. They specifically want night mode photos, which excludes any iPhone that isn't an iPhone 11, so you need an 11 for that night mode feature. And whereas last year it was like just about any iPhone, if not any iPhone. so what's the story here?
Yeah, so they did it first time last year where they started like a shot on iPhone. I mean, it is basically an advertising campaign, right? But it's dressed up as a competition. So
it's clever. Yeah, marketing.
Yeah, it's clever. It is nice. And you can, and they're doing it again this year. So if you're a photographer and you shoot with your iPhone, you can take a picture, tweet it with the relevant hashtag, or you can email it to them. And then they support like Instagram and the Chinese Weibo social network as well. And they will have a panel of experts, including like Schiller and the VP of photography at Apple, as well as some outside artists and photographers, review all the pictures and submissions they get in, and then they pick like the five winners, which end up getting shown around. And last year they did like a newsroom story talking about the winners, and you even got like comments about what the judges liked and the particular photos that, you know, got shortlisted.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw those pictures be used on like billboards and some ad campaigns and stuff. And they're basically doing the same thing this year, but you can only, it's about, the theme is night mode. So you have to have iPhone 11 or iPhone 11 Pro to take the picture, but you are allowed to do aftermarket editing as well, either in the Apple Photos app or using third-party software. So you can take your pictures and then tweak them up to make them look really good, and then you can send them in, and then maybe you'll win. Obviously, the chances are you won't, because of a lot more professional photo. There are a lot of professional photographers in the world that have a lot, you know, smart ideas about how to use iPhone photography. But like, I submitted a picture, but there's no way on any universe that it wins, because the demo photos they use in the announcement for the challenge are better than the picture I submitted. So it's like, it, you know, it's kind of fun to join in or whatever, but I guess we'll like, and I think it runs through March the 20 something, so we'll have to see the results when they announce it.
Yeah, I've got a few thoughts on this too. Last year I submitted just for fun, you know, with no expectation of winning, and did not. This year I will do the same, but it's tricky because in the Photos app, there's not an easy way, if at all, to, there's no album or, you know, you can look at live photos, you can look at panoramic photos, lots of things like that, but videos, but you can't just look for just night mode shots. And it's, I guess they just, you know, it's one of those things. And even looking back, like you can see if a picture is a live photo or not without trying to play it because with a logo there. But night mode, I don't think you can.
Yeah, there's no indicator.
It just wouldn't be a live photo, right? If you have live photos on, then the indication is that it's not a live photo. So I'm having trouble. Like, I'm looking back at my library, and there's some cool shots I took in October around the French Quarter in New Orleans, and I was intentionally trying to take night mode shots that were pretty cool. And so I'll submit one of those, but it's I'm even looking like the XF data, and it's like, it's hard to nail down.
Well, that also raises the question of whether the submission team are actually checking somehow if you're actually taking it in night mode, or if you're just taking a nice pretty picture of the with your phone in the dark.
So, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and especially as they let you edit using third-party tools.
That
like,
can remove some XF data.
That can remove the metadata. Yes. Yeah, so even if there is like a secret flag, you could just say, well, I did it in this app and it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah. It's tricky. Well, they're going to pick some nice pictures taken on an iPhone and hopefully they're at nighttime at least. So.
And one of the controversies of this challenge last year is when it was announced, they only said that you'd get your picture on the billboards, on the ads, and you get like a credit, you get like a name credit. And then that caused a whole furore about Apple's not paying these people. And then a couple of days later, they changed course and said, you know, we believe that artists should be paid for their work and we will pay a commission license for the usage of winners' pictures.
Yeah.
And luckily they remember that lesson, because this year that text was in there from the beginning.
Apple believes strongly that artists should be compensated for their work and will pay a licensing fee to the 5 winning photographers for use of such photos on Apple marketing channels. Yeah. It was like kind of buried on there, but they at least had it in there. That was one of the first things I looked for.
I mean, it's a fun challenge. It's about prestige more than anything else. Like, if you are actually a professional photographer, the licensing fee that you win, if you did win, probably not that big, I'll be honest. You know, you otherwise they would jobs. Have like, otherwise they publicize like the money aspect of it and be like, we have a $100,000 prize. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's probably
there's a difference in a contest submission win and then something being commissioned for Apple and you're the photographer for that.
Yeah. And if you are a professional photographer and you get your picture picked, that is like perfect for your portfolio for future clients to be like, I actually picked a picture that, you know, Apple likes so much they use it in an ad. Like, that's more valuable.
Yeah. It would be cool if there were follow-up stories where, like, they found someone that way and then boosted them, you know, by working with them even more.
Yeah.
Just to note, it's open now until January the 29th. And so that's toward the end of this month. And then the winners are on March 4th that you've got to submit this month. And, you know, we've got the story on how to submit and everything. But through the end of this month, or at least March 29th, or January 29th, and then March 4th is whenever you find out who won. And then, Mia, you had a story called basically Apple Wins Christmas. So what's this all about?
Yeah, this is based off a analytics firm, because obviously Apple doesn't release numbers anymore. So we just have to go on what the analytics firms tell us. Flurry Analytics, and they have like frameworks and SDKs that people integrate into applications. and it's basically an analytics company. And so in addition to providing the analytics to the developers, they also synthesize all the data points themselves and make these like pretty graphs and stuff. And what they claim is that the Apple had the top 9 activated devices across the week of Christmas. And so that's like iPhone 11, iPhone XR, iPhone 11 Pro Max. There was even
6 Plus is in there,
like,
yeah.
The iPhone 6, the iPhone 7, yeah. And those like 9 models outstripped all of the Android competition.
Yeah, but the 10th phone was like what, Xiaomi Mi 4 LTE. Which is under the 10, which isn't sold but 1 year. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's a cool stat, right? And this chart includes tablets, by the way, but obviously tablet volumes are just much lower, so they don't come in the top 10, but they're included in the overall percentages. You do have to remember, though, that obviously, like, whereas the iPhone's concentrated on a relatively small handful of models, there are so many more unique models of Android phones that, like, in total, there would have been more Android phones activated than iPhones on Christmas Day, for instance, but the actual, like, per individual model, the iPhone's, you know, way ahead.
Yeah, we're definitely away from like one new phone every year, though. It's multiple models, and they break those out.
Yeah, so they have holiday market share by manufacturer as well as like the top models, and I think Apple was like 45%. So then the Android, essentially everything else is an Android device, right? So then Samsung was second with like 30% or 28%, and then everyone else is like fighting for the rest. So that kind of shows you the mix up, and that reflects like the standard market of the United States, right, where about 40-50% of phone activations are iPhones, and then, you know, all the Android manufacturers fight for the rest. Like, it's a cool story, and it just kind of shows like just how many units of the same phone Apple do ship compared to the rest of the industry.
Yeah, and also it wouldn't be long ago when Samsung would have been, you know, you wouldn't see Xiaomi there. Or Huawei, or you know, yeah, those names, it'd be Samsung, like, you know, neck and neck. So
yeah, it's kind of crazy you don't see like a single Samsung phone in the top 10 or something.
Yeah,
right. Like, because if you walked up to like random people in the street, or if you just like asked me 2 weeks ago, what do you think is like the top lists? You'd probably list the iPhone 11. You'd probably list the iPhone XR. You probably wouldn't expect like the iPhone 6 Plus to beat out all of the Android competition, right?
Like, six plus, I can't run the new stuff, right? It's 6S only.
Yeah. Correct. iPhone 6 ended up with iOS 12.
It's unfortunate, folks. All right, let's talk about Apple's good fortune, the single day record of the App Store purchases. So what happened on New Year's Day and with other services as well?
Yeah, so Apple had this press release on the newsroom, which was titled, Apple rings in new era of services following landmark year. Now, I got really excited when I saw this title. I was like, they're going to announce some stuff right in the middle of CES. They're going to upset the whole game. Yes, it's not a product. It's going to be services. Unfortunately, the actual content of the announcement was slightly less interesting.
Yeah.
But they basically, like, they had a quote from Eddie Q, and they was talking about how Apple had started off its service offerings in 2019 between Arcade and TV Plus and News and the App Store and Apple Music and everything else. And then they had, like, breakdowns per like division. And so the actual like news in the story is they announced numbers for the App Store. So they did this generally every year, but what they said this year is that they set a single day record on New Year's Day, so for the most amount of money transacted through App Store app purchases and in-app purchases as well. So New Year's Day 2020, they topped $386 million, which is a 20% increase over last year, so the same day last year. And then across the week between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, App Store customers spent a record $1.42 billion. And in total, developers have earned over $155 billion since the App Store launched in 2008. And what's particularly remarkable here is they say that a quarter of that $155 billion, so like $40 billion, $38 billion, came from the last year alone. No, mm-hmm. despite it being, you know, 2008 to 2020, essentially 2019, a quarter of that $155 billion number came from the last year, which kind of, you know, highlights how so much of the growth of Apple's services division still relies on the App Store commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because for that $155 billion, you've got to imagine the other $40 billion in 30% commission that Apple took. You see what I mean? Because that $155 billion represents the 70% stake. And then Apple would have close to raw profit on the remaining $40 billion. Thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Unlock your productivity with Text Expander and manage everything that you type repetitively. Email addresses, phone numbers, common message replies, and more. Turn the things you type into reusable snippets to access them time and time again. Text Expander works everywhere you type, such as in word processors, email apps, messaging, online forms, the lot. Text Expander goes beyond simple find and replace. Customize your reusable snippets with fill-in fields and pop-up lists so you can quickly stamp out an invoice with easily editable fields to change only the bits that need to be customized for each individual. If you've ever written something twice, there's a good chance you could work smarter and use a Text Expander snippet instead. It's not just about automating repeat work. Reusing snippets ensures consistency in your messaging. Text Expander is available for macOS, iPhone, iPad, Windows, and Chrome. And Text Expander for Teams adds a whole extra layer for coordinating work with others. Snippets can be shared automatically across an organization, and you can manage which members of your team have access to different snippets with Text Expander groups. You can even see statistics about which snippets are being used more than others. Companies use Text Expander for Teams for things like customer support and reporting. Shared snippets unify your organization's voice. Again, unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast.
We had a hashtag Ask95Mac question recently from our friend on Twitter at Cletus Fetus, who says, do you think Apple is compromising on its experience in order to upsell its services? And I've had a quick response here, which is that it was obviously cleaner years ago whenever there was no sort of pressure to pay money to use the full experience of the music app or the news app or the photos app, but it was just the app was the app, and then you put in your information into it. On the flip side of that, you couldn't do as much. Like, you know, from iTunes Radio and on, you could take the music app out of the box without spending any money, and then you could play music from it. So that was a good thing. And then that hopefully the services are so good that you don't pay much attention to upsell pressure. It's do you want to use it or not? And if you don't, then a way to get rid of it is good. Like in the music app, I know you can hide Apple Music if you don't want to subscribe to it. The big counter there is News Plus isn't that great. And so it's a big part of the app that they put there. So that is sort of a compromise to the news app itself. Whereas most the services are better. So is the software experience. What do you think?
Yeah, it really varies. Like you can't take them all as a group. It really varies with their strategy on each individual one. Like, and obviously, you know, Apple has always sold music, right? They've always technically had music services on the phone because you could always buy songs, right? Like the iTunes. But what was different is that you'd buy the music in the iTunes store, and then the music app would just be pure library management, right? Search, playlist, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And as the industry's evolved, the wider industry, and obviously as Apple has moved more into like putting subscriptions on every app, essentially, those kind of like upsells have creeped into the main experience. Like Apple Music, it would kind of be insane if they said, oh, you have to go to this separate app just to add stuff to your library, because like the For You and the recommendations are so integral to the experience.
Sure.
What bristles people, and you know, fairly, is if you're not an Apple Music subscriber, every like month you'll get a nice little pop-up saying, do you want to subscribe to Apple Music? And it's like, no, I just want to be an iTunes Store customer and then, you know, just get my music from elsewhere. And that doesn't happen anymore. Now you get like pop-ups for, do you want to subscribe to Apple Music? Or a little banner at the top. Apple Music has 60 million songs. Just sign up now for the 3-month free trial or whatever. Like, that's where it starts to, you know, cross the line of annoyance. Now, for Apple Music, I don't mind it as much. The other apps are more egregious. The app stores, like Apple Arcade in the App Store, I think's, you know, pretty reasonable. And part of the reason that is the App Store is the app where you go and buy stuff anyway, right? Like, it's not like they're putting our adverts for arcade on your home screen.
Yeah, if they didn't take away updates from a tab, and you know, that's the annoyance there, is that you've got to tap into your face and then get updates
I think in the perfect world, the arcade would be like a subsection of the games tab, right? That'd be if Apple was truly just being magnanimous. We're not interested in any money at all, right? That's where it would end up. It's kind of like funny how they've kind of, you know, jumped on the muscle memory of
games would be a subsection of arcade. It's like arcade or games.
Like the fact that it did actually replace the updates tab is kind of the overlap there. But how often were people checking the updates tab in the wider world? I don't think it was very much. So I'll give them that one. Like arcades inside the App Store is fine, right? Music, a lot of people, Apple Music is generally a better experience than buying stuff through the iTunes Store, right? So if you're going to present music to me, okay, right. And you do actually have that option to fully disable all of the tabs that you don't use if you don't use Apple Music, right? Yeah. It has a show Apple Music option in the settings. And if you turn it off, the For You tab, the Browse tab, they will disappear.
Maybe they need they'll never do this, but like a toggle that's just nuclear. Never upsell me in my apps.
They're never going to do that.
Right. Like, don't show me News Plus. Don't show me Apple Music. Don't show me new information about Apple Card. You know, those things. I guess the option for that would be like move to a country that doesn't have any of the services and then you get that. But they'll never do that.
Yeah. So then you have News, which is a pretty for a start, the News Plus upgrade, the appeal of the service is weak. Right. And then they have the ghoul to show it every fourth item in that today view list now is here's a News Plus feature and here's the top four magazines from Apple News Plus. And even the notifications you get for Apple News Spotlight, now all of them always mention Apple News Plus in the little description. That is going way too far, I think. The Apple News app is perfectly fine, standalone. And then they have a tab called News Plus for, you know, their premium upsell stuff. The presence of that tab alone in the app should be enough, right? You shouldn't also then have to have constant featuring of the News Plus articles in the main Today tab of the News app. That is going too far.
Yeah, and in that case, if you care about News Plus the most, you know, which is your subscription to the magazines and newspapers, then you might not care about the online content that isn't part of a magazine or newspaper. So then you there might be a preference there to have News Plus be the thing that you see and News to not be what you see. So no one's getting what they want in that situation.
Yeah, iCloud storage, right? Which is, and again, it's a separate conversation about whether you should have to pay for iCloud storage at all. But in the world where you have to pay for it, to be fair to Apple, you don't really see an iCloud storage upgrade option until you run out of space, right? While you've got enough space, you don't see anything. Whereas in News, you're always seeing News Plus stuff, even if you don't care about it, right? The iCloud storage, it's not like if you open the Files app, there's not a banner at the top of the Files app saying, if you had iCloud storage, you could do this, this, and this, right? That never happened. And, you know, that would be really bad if they start doing that, but they don't. But that's kind of the analogy for the News app is, and then you've got Apple Card situation. And obviously in the UK, I haven't seen this firsthand, but what's happening is that every time there's a new Apple Card feature, it becomes a little banner in the Wallet app, even if you're not an Apple Card user, right? And so in those kind of situations, maybe showing a banner once a year for, are you interested in Apple Card content? Yes or no, right? And then that's kind of a reminder about the Apple Card in general. But people got really upset at the end of December when they added the monthly installment plans. And then everyone's Wallet app was here's this big banner for iPhone installment plans inside the Wallet
app. Yeah, people with a brand new iPhone were getting notified that you could finance a brand new iPhone with your Apple Card, you know, on their brand new iPhone, but it's a balance to strike. Yeah. I think that one's okay.
Surely the that promotion should be enough when you're going to buy an iPhone, and they can then offer you, do you want to buy it with an Apple Card instead? Right, it shouldn't have to be so in your face in every single application.
Yeah, I did see a lot of people learn about it on Twitter for the next time that they buy an iPhone, so it's tough. But yep. Anything else there?
TV, obviously, we've talked about the TV situation before. I like TV Plus, but the whole way the app's structured, you're being upsold on something. The current state of the TV app, whether on purpose or incidental, is it's made to upsell you on something. If you subscribe to TV Plus, they want you to buy other Apple TV channels. If you don't subscribe to anything, they want you to subscribe to Apple TV Plus. Oh, and here's all your iTunes content as well that you can buy. It's just way too much, and they need to pull it back, have like one tab, which is where you can get new stuff and where you can pay for stuff, and then have like dedicated sections, which is just showing you your own content that you could buy, that you currently pay for, or you've bought in your library. Like, I don't have an innate aversion to Apple wanting to make more money in different ways, but there are definitely places where they go way too far, right?
Yeah. I guess after all of your examples, I've got to amend my answer and say that they do compromise the experience in order to upsell services. But it's unclear if it's intentional or if it's just bad design.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely intentional, but the degree to which it's intentional varies per app, and then there are other places where it's just bad design.
Yeah. It ranges from like Apple Music, where you can turn it off literally, or to TV, where even if you pay, they want you to pay more.
Yeah, like the TV experience is clearly just bad, right? Yeah. Like the news experience is intentional, right? You don't pay for news, they shove it in your face. The TV experience is like, you can literally pay for like everything in the world, and then they still just randomly have stuff to buy, right? And it's just the way the app design. And I remain 100% confident that it's not going to be like that forever. It's just the waiting game of when they actually fix it.
Yeah. Speaking of TV Plus, there's a few things to note this week, not about the content, but about the service in general. And the first is that it's the Golden Globes, right? Was the awards show over the weekend where Tim Cook was in the audience, and then there was some yada yada, but that happened. There were no awards for the morning show, although it was nominated.
So it was nominated for Best Drama, and then both Reese Witherspoon and Aniston were nominated for Best Actress in a Drama. So they were basically going up against each other. So even in the best case, Apple could only win two, right? Because either Aniston or Reese Witherspoon was going to win. And they didn't win any. Not really surprising. I think we even said that, right, when we talked about them getting nominated, that we didn't really expect them to win. It's fine. Like, the morning show has integrated into culture enough to be considered a success at this point.
Anyway, yeah.
It's perfectly fine, right? They got nominated. They're in the picture. Maybe they'll win some other awards at some of these other things that are coming up. But, like, if you look at Netflix, right, think of the size of the Netflix library. They got something like 35 nominations and they only won twice. So, like, the success of a streaming service is not dependent on how many awards they win. Obviously, Apple is gunning to get awards and they want them, but like, no one's getting like told off because they didn't win an award in the first like 2 months of the service being available.
And another point that you had was that it wasn't just that they only submitted the morning show for consideration, but that they submitted all their shows.
Yeah, everything. They had ads. They did everything they possibly could to get these shows in front of critics, left, right, and center. They had ads on websites. They had this entire like for your consideration portal where everyone could see and like, oh, I like that and stuff. And on the Golden Globes, the morning show got some nominations, and the other stuff didn't. And what you might find is that next year, when the shows have been like ingrained into society for a bit longer and
season two out,
then you might find they start getting attention.
I'm definitely seeing from I scan Twitter for tweets about the Apple Watch, and so I see a lot of tweets about Watch Apple TV Plus, and every day there's a new person who recommends, after finishing the morning show, Apple TV Plus just to watch the morning show. I think For All Mankind became my favorite, but I don't see that as much or yet, but like you mentioned, it's definitely taking the culture, it's working.
And one day I have a column for Apple TV, and there's definitely a lot of people every single day like watching it. Plus, they released the trailer for Mythic Quest this week, and the mentions and like the interactivity around that. What I found when they were doing the trailers for Dickinson and For All Mankind before the service was out, there was like, I'd say every other comment was just, this looks great, but it's on Apple TV, so it's a dead end, right? And now Mythic Quest has come out with its trailer, and it's only been 2.5 months since the service launched, and people are much more accepting of it, right? Like, there still are those comments where it's like, this is dead in the water because it's an Apple TV fail, blah, blah, blah. But it's way less of a proportion of the whole. And everything that we can see, all signals that we can see from the outside, and Apple hasn't announced numbers, right, which actually like back the stuff up, all signals from the outside seems like they're on a perfectly good track. With the number of shows they have, they're doing pretty well.
Yep. And Apple will end the TV Critics Association press tour this year with an appearance. which you think ending is usually you want to open it up or, you know, be in the middle but not end it. But they are the Sunday appearance. So.
Yeah, they're the last appearance on Sunday. Yeah. So sometimes, right, some like Glastonbury festival, right, the big show is on the last day.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think that's the case in this game. And normally the Television Critics Association Winter Press Tour is kind of where all the big networks announce like renewals and what's coming up for the mid-season period. We don't know yet how Apple's going to treat these kind of industry events. Are they going
to
follow?
We know about renewals already, and then yes, they've seemed to have announced kind of whenever they want to based on when it's going to be actually premiering.
Yeah, and so we don't know if they're going to follow convention and actually have like stuff for the industry people that attend to actually get their teeth into, or whether it's just going to be a regurgitation of what we already know. Because Little America, which is the series coming out on the 17th, will be out before the 19th, which is when they're appearing at this press tour. And then by that time, I'm pretty sure like the Mythic Quest stuff will already be the embargo will be on, so like the sure, episodes yeah, will have been screened. So realistically, most of the people going there, assuming they don't announce anything new, they don't really have much to do. So, and because it's the first time around, we can only guess. It would be nice if they have some new announcements, but I wouldn't like bet on it really. If yeah, anything, they'll announce that, like, I think what could happen is on that same week, they'll announce something for March, right? A new show for March. Maybe it's Amazing Stories. Maybe it's Home Before Dark. Something along those lines. And then they screen like the trailer first at this press store place, right? To give them something. But for everything we've seen so far, they like announcing the shows on their terms, not like random conferences.
Yeah, it could easily be just thanks for having us. We're Apple. This is what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks.
And maybe they'll bring some of the directors and the producers along to have like little chats and stuff.
Yeah, but it's
kind of funny. Yeah. A lot of the other people that go there, like HBO and NBC and everyone and all the other big names, they have like Q&A sessions. So if and you know, Apple's normal aversion to having any sort of public Q&A is very, very high, so mm-hmm, I wouldn't expect that to change. And if there is Q&A, I'm hopefully someone will ask about the status of the banger, which continues to be listed as coming soon in the TV app, and it's this weird like no man's land situation.
Yeah, what I found interesting about this story is that typically if Apple's going to be involved in a conference or something, they're going to headline it and be first and then be done and out of there. And in this case, they are the underdogs in the TV world, and so they could, you know, they probably did not have an option but to be last in this case, and that is not the honor, but it fits, you know, their role right now.
It's almost like everyone was booked in 7 months ago, and then TV Plus launched in November, and Apple's like, we come too. Okay, yeah, you can have the Sunday.
Yeah, when half the people I've already gone home, yeah. And then finally in the TV space this week, as part of the CES announcements and Apple's big service post, they reiterated that LG, Sony, and Vizio TVs will get the Apple TV app this year, which is really weird that it, you know, I mean, a year ago it was Samsung exclusive first, and then it came to Roku and Fire TV devices, like you mentioned before, including TV sets, but not the like the first round of HomeKit TVs from LG, Sony, and Vizio. They're played too as well. So this is weird. But maybe by the end of this year, this will all be resolved, and there will be one TV with everything: AirPlay, HomeKit, and the Apple TV app. We don't have it
yet.
And
then they can move on to games console.
Yeah, that's not something I really am curious about that. And I don't see a lot of people ask questions about it. But I think maybe, you know, as people want TV Plus in more places, then they'll ask about that. But yeah, definitely the PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch, you know, it's because other services are there, you know.
I've seen people want Apple TV Plus in their Teslas because obviously they have
okay
and stuff on yeah, the screen. So
I could see that. Yeah. They're getting Disney Plus if they don't have it already. So I think the thing there is that whenever you charge at a supercharger, you've got time to kill, and it can be spent with watching a TV show. So, cool. A few more things this is mentioned before we go. I think I've mentioned in passing a few times on the podcast that I got to go to the Kennedy Space Center in December and see a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket launch, which was to deliver a Dragon capsule with research and supplies for the International Space Station. That was a very cool experience. And our colleague, Michael Stieber, did the hard work for me, which was take my 400 and something photos from the experience and pick the good ones and then edit them. And so because of his great work there, I got to finally just post my pictures from the experience. And so that's a story that we'll have linked in the show notes. And then you got to post your decade in review story, which is a lot of words.
It's a lot of words. Yeah. We talked about this in our yep. New Year's episode. So
now it exists.
If you haven't, yeah, it exists. And if you haven't listened to our New Year's episode, you should definitely listen to that because that was a really good episode.
Yeah, we had fun as well. Yeah. Yep. And then there's a new app for the Mac out this week called Front and Center, which is from John Siracusa and a friend of his. And it's a neat app. What the app does is, in our years of using the Mac, when you click the window of an app, that window becomes forefront. If you click the dock icon of an app, all of its windows come at the front. But from John Siracusa's history, the classic Mac version of that behavior would be that if you click the window without the dock icon, all of its windows come front. And what Front and Center does is it lets you change that default, so you can have it default to the classic version or the old version. And if you use, I think, like the command key, and you command click, then it does the opposite of that. So you can have like a default behavior for how windows appear, and then command click if you want like one app to be an exception for that click. And there's also an option to hide the dock icon or the menu bar icon or both if you wanted to. But it's a neat app, and I'm not quite sure, like, you know, I don't have classic Mac experience, but it this does make sense to me, and so I'm trying it out. If nothing else, I think the menu bar icon is very cute. So it's like $3 in the Mac App Store.
Yeah, it's an interesting behavior, because you can imagine, like, you know, a less, like, say if you've got an iMac in your family, in your like family house, and most people end up using their phone, but occasionally they need to do some like something of significance on the actual computer. The metaphor that all the windows come forward when you click on one, it's probably easier to like grok for those kind of, you know, four people. Like, it's just easier that everything comes forward when you click on one window.
Yeah, the Mac OS X version that we know seems more sophisticated to me, and like how I would expect it to work. And then I never made the distinction that when you click on the dock icon, then you get all of the windows. And I'm a big fan of like expose mission control style, where you can see everything and just find what you want. But this is, I bought it, but you know, it's John Siracusa, and I did not like the dock icon, so I hid that, and I liked the menu bar icon, so it's showing. And the other person, his name is Lee, I think Fiok, and so he's sort of the, he wrote this in, I think, Objective-C, and then Siracusa rewrote it in Swift, is the story there. And the whole reason for this existing is that Drag Thing from James Thompson was one of those 32-bit apps that was not going to be updated for 64-bit only macOS Catalina. And this was a behavior in Drag Thing, which like predates the dock as like a launcher experience with the Mac. And this exists solely to replace that feature that was gone from the move from 32-bit to 64-bit. All right, well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you like the show, you can give us a rating in Apple Podcast or a recommendation in Overcast. We're also available in Spotify if you want to recommend us there. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And if you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.